You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown. Almost our culture, current events, Catholic things. We do that every day. Thank you for joining us. Today we'll be talking about what appears to be armed insurgency as we have Marines going into the battlefield to support the troops, the rebel troops that we've been supporting since the Iraqi invasion, but now ground troops again. So where does this go? What does this look like? Is this a just war that we're fighting? We'll talk about that this afternoon. Certainly a situation of horrible injustice when you see what's happening in South Sudan. The BBC report on the children who are being killed there, that innocent individuals are being targeted and assumed to be rebels. Talking about the dangers of tribalism, we talked about this before, but we're going to get into that a little bit more this afternoon as well. And speaking of rebels, true rebels, those who have changed the course of history, always seem to have a way of doing things that is oddly almost as if they're not oppositional. All right. So talking about that in light of the disruptor in chief and how to really get effective change going. We'll discuss all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, we talk about for 50 minutes. Every afternoon, sorry. Reading a post that apparently confused those who are responding now. I said the good guys are always the bad guys to the bad guys. And of course, the inverse is always true as well. Meaning that there are those who see others as bad, and bad is good and good is bad. These are just arbitrary labels, right? That's all it is. It's just a label. We just label arbitrarily. We believe this, therefore that's bad. And this can get into all kinds of dynamics. And the story is the BBC from South Sudan, where there are kids who are being targeted by the militia there and the basically saying, well, we prosecute those who would do something illegal, such as rape or murder. These are rebels we're killing. Don't let them tell you that they're innocent citizens. They're not. We want the innocent citizens just to go about their way. But those who are truly part of the rebel forces, we want to kill because they're rebels. So we have to kill them. So That is in and of itself is a dangerous world, right? Because if you've got rebellion, you've got needs that are not being met, right? Now, either you, as a government, try to do everything you can to meet the needs, or if you can't, we don't try to. You know, granted, there can be uprisings. This is, we fought a civil war on our soil, which wasn't that long ago. And I think it's in the grand scheme of history, right? In the grand scheme of history. And as Christians of all people, we should know our grand scheme of history because we go back 3 millennia plus when we, just from our own scriptural reference, our historical scriptural reference, We go back a long, long time. You could say we go back 6,000 years if you want to, right? Because we kind of look at the lineage back to Adam and Eve as recorded history. I don't know that that's a fair assessment. That's another question. I mean, I don't want to get into that. But we go back a long time, right? Where there's an intimate connection to those who walked this earth 3,000 plus years ago. And I'm talking about when we get into things like the beginnings of the nation of Israel, when we get into Abraham and Isaac and on and on and on. And for some reason, even as Christians, we think ancient history, when we think Civil War, it was like, oh, that was such a long time ago. Well, 1860 was not a long time ago. Not really. Yeah, there's nobody walking around who was a part of that, true. But it wasn't that long ago for us to say that that's ancient history and we kind of just need to move on and ignore it. So, but I believe they're still underpinning. Where I was going with this is with rebels. We're always going to, when needs are not being met, or not even that, when tradition is threatened, when what appears to be a threat to the lifestyle, the environment, the world in which people have lived, that's where rebels are born, right? Rebels are born of that. Rebels are not born because somebody wakes up one day and says, let's just change things, right? No, it's usually because they perceive, right? Operative term, they perceive a threat. They perceive a threat that says something could change what I know and love. Therefore, I have to somehow oppose that. And this, of course, going back to our own Civil War, this is exactly what happened. And this is why those who defend the South's position will say, well, it wasn't because of slavery, it was because of our lifestyle. Yes, your lifestyle, right? Your industry, everything that was hinged upon owning people. Absolutely, yes, it was your lifestyle. You're right, yes. Because the wealth of the South was on the backs of the slave. Of course, yes, absolutely. Defend that lifestyle. And then, I mean, the North, I mean, my goodness, how much better were we? When I say we, as if I'm on one side or the other. Kentucky boy. I'll definitely not be on the side of slavery. But again, we were in the middle of an industrial, we were at the beginning of an industrial revolution. We weren't at the middle necessarily. We were beginning an emergence of industry, which was kind of a slave labor anyway, with a lot of immigrants in this world of production and factory machinery, meaning people being machinery and factories. And we look back as, you know, some golden era of great Americanism because of what we were able to accomplish with manufacturing. And I think the question is, it's a good question to ask, is that even good? When we put people into these modes of mechanism. Scripture is kind of clear about working the land, right? That there's something about farming and building and something about this construction and mastery along with the very real understanding of natural consequences and natural occurrences. There's something about that. Now, am I saying we all need to be farmers? My goodness. Yeah. I'm not trying to be Pol Pot on us here, right? I'm not saying, okay, so all of you business people get out to the farms. Right. That doesn't work either. But it really comes down to human dignity. And where I'm going with this is rebellion, right? Tribalism. We'll talk more about Rebels in a minute in another segment coming up, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But tribalism, when we get to that point where we are convinced that someone else is our enemy simply because of who they are, and then when we convince ourselves that that enemy must be eradicated, now we get a problem. Because what does Jesus say? Jesus says, love your enemy. Do good to those who hate you. Be poor in spirit. Right? You don't have to defend yourself. Serve those who have a problem with you. That is as countercultural as anything could ever be. And we don't do it. We were taught it. But no, we get in our tribes. We pretend, because it's all a pretense. It's all a, let's assign this meaning, this us against them mentality. Let's assign this meaning that says, we're right, you're wrong. Let's get in our tribe's right, your tribe's wrong. And then what? Then what? Now, if there's atrocity, if there's someone who is really doing something atrocious, and this is where we're going to get into this discussion a little bit later on as well. This is where you kind of say that justice is served by intervention. Justice is served by intervention. That when we know that, for instance, someone is in the perfect example, the micro example, but it can be globalized as well. But the micro example is, you've heard me talk a zillion times about the justice of a concealed carry weapon holder who is legally bearing a firearm concealed, but they've got the firearm on them at all times. And I know people who would do this. They may have an ankle holster or something under they're concealed carry licensed people. And you've got at that point, now you've got a huge responsibility, because now you have to be a defender of the innocent. Not just a defender of your home or a defender of yourself. When you see something happening, you must intervene. At least that's what I think. I think that's the only ethical way of looking at that. So if you see someone, which there have been those who've tried to intervene who have lost their lives as a result of it, but they did try, an active shooter situation where there's someone who is doing something egregious in the sense of killing innocent people in a mass shooting, which you have the potential of encountering, then now you've got a responsibility to do something to stop the carnage before it gets worse, because you've put yourself into that position. Now, that degree of justice is completely different than saying, my tribe's better than your tribe. My tribe has the truth. Your tribe has lies. Therefore, the lies must be eradicated. The only way we can eradicate it is by eradicating you. And that's what we see. That's what we see a lot in quote-unquote ethnic cleansing, right? We've watched this in Africa for centuries. And it happens in other countries as well, and it has happened. Essentially in our country with the Great Civil War. Doesn't have to happen again. More on rebellion and how to do it right. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. I was talking about tribalism a little bit ago, and rebellion, I think, is is important, believe it or not. While tribalism is destructive, I think being rebellious can be constructive. And I know it's interesting to say things of that nature and seem to be talking out of both sides of my mouth. But what I'm saying is this, this inspired by a Time magazine piece on the president's fighting the government, right? Everything from the judiciary to past administrations, right? The intelligence agencies, you name it. It's let's fight these powers that be. And the government itself, if you're going to enact a new regulation, apparently there has to be two more that are removed. That's the rule now. There's going to be new restrictions. We've got to remove old ones. So all of this in a very defiant, disruptive sort of fashion that certainly is not GOP politics, really. Could be Tea Party politics, right, in the sense that there's a contention of Republicans who are contentious against the status quo GOP conservatism, which I think I am a part of. I think that that's kind of the world of conservatism I have always respected, this kind of stay the course, right? As rebellious as I may seem at times and as artistic and creative and whatever that I happen to be, I've always kind of had a stay the course mentality. If you look at my career, right, I've done the exact same thing. I say from the time I was 8 years old with very little variance other than having to change jobs because of necessity. But in the media world, I've had a side obsession of music and played semi-professionally. It's kind of, I've been doing the same thing since I was a teenager. I mean, there's really very little change. No big career changes, no big moves to other industries, nothing. I have just stayed the course, right? I mean, I think that there's something about that, that when we, you know, you got to reinvent yourself within that world at times, yes, but when we're constantly in this, let's reinvent, I don't know what that does. And there, I'm certainly a huge, if it's not broke, don't fix it person, but at the same time, you kind of got to recognize when things are broken. So, you know, at this point, this is, I think, what we're seeing. There are those who feel that the system is horribly broken and the odds are stacked against them and everything is bad, bad, bad. And then there are those who are quite comfortable with the way things have been and are, or at least realizes that, you know, it's a pendulum swing. That's going to happen. And then there are those on the other side who want to get into something. I don't know. We've got such a mixed bag of political perspectives now. It's crazy. But here's the thing that I think is universal, and I may be wrong. I think everyone wants to have the impact that says this is lasting. This is enduring. This is something that truly makes a difference. This is kind of what we've been waiting for. I think any political leader wants that. I think that individuals want that for themselves, of themselves, to be a game changer. And I may be wrong, but I think it's kind of innate in us to have that pioneering spirit and want to venture into worlds that are new and unknown and untapped and try to find a voice there, trying to find a place there. And, you know, even staying the course, you can venture into that. Because if you stay the course and you travel far enough, you're going to get into some uncharted territory. It's going to happen. But now, with just this kind of, let's break everything, even if it wasn't broken, let's break it and refix it, that's an odd sort of attitude because you end up with confrontation on your hands, right? You're going to break down these stereotypes. It's going to be very confrontational. It's going to be It is going to be disruptive. It's going to be challenging. You know, we're looking now at a French candidate for the prime minister of France who wants to do away with the euro, wants to not only disband the European Union, but go back to individual currencies in countries. You're talking about a disruptive nature of doing anything. You've had a stability in the European marketplace for a long time with the euro, and to go back to a individual country currency, which is, yeah, there's precedence for it. Sure, it's been done, but it was done because of a long history of development that finally said, let's unionize this all of Europe into this one common currency. And it's made sense. It's offered stability, even to those lower performing countries, part of the EU. And that's been a challenge. There are those that say, well, these guys really aren't carrying their weight. And we've heard a lot of that in this administration so far about people carrying their weight. There's a very similar attitude from this French conservative who is really kind of talking a lot of the same language. So interesting world to consider being rebellious in, because as you rebel, there's such a disruption to the system that it could potentially harm the very foundation of the systems. So in all of this, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to rebel, right? There's the rebellion that is disruptive. And then there's the rebellion that's constructive. So my favorite rebel, a guy who I value tremendously as a historical figure, but also as someone who I trust prays for me. I hope he does. Jeez, I need it. That's St. Francis of Assisi, who, 13th century, decided just that he was fed up with the way he was living and the even within the church. Right? It was a Catholic family. Of course, 12th century, what else? He's from a wealthy family. He's trying to do everything he can to present himself as authentically as he can. He's helping out the poor. He's giving of his father's stuff without asking, essentially, possibly harming the profits of the business because he's just giving stuff away and trying to help people out. He's taken before the bishop, challenged on this by his father, and he finally says, forget, I'm just gonna strip it all off. Literally, he pulled off his clothes, threw them at the feet of the bishop, and someone grabbed him the gardener's robe, and he went off by himself to contemplate what had just happened. And because of that act of rebellion, which was only rebellious in the sense of breaking away from the culture, he actually found his way into true authenticity, right? He found his way into a path that says, this is what the real deal looks like. Poverty, chastity, obedience, prayer, fasting, almsgiving, right? And because he led such an authentic life, because he led such a life of real deal, this is how you live this. Not piety, not pie in the skyety, right? But real authenticity. He changed the course of history. And others began to follow him because they were like, who's this guy? He must be doing something right. He seems to be content. And he's not running the race like the rest. 12th century, this happened. And unfortunately, we don't learn from that example of this is how you rebel. Gandhi, in what, the 20s, right? 1920s, India, British occupied India decides to be a rebel by simply returning to a life of austerity and complete abandonment into the Hindu faith to say, this is how we do this. Martin Luther King in the 1960s. Disruptor, yes. Rebel, yes. But not in changing systems internally, but on the outside, showing what a movement looks like. A movement of peace, a movement of solidarity, of commonality, and respect. And going to a very radical, meaning the root of the position to take as a rebel, challenging the status quo. Can be done. We've got the evidence of how to do it well, and we need to embrace that. Be back with more in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. So we got armed insurgents fighting the ISIS troops in Iraq. We have put ground troops there with Marines on the ground. And the question remains, as always, in anything of this nature, just war or not? We have to ask that as Catholics. And as we were talking in the first segment a little bit about this justification when it comes to expectations of individuals who have the ability to respond in an act of domestic terrorism or mass shooting, whatever, if they're there and they can respond accordingly, they have to. Same is true when it comes to countries that have greater capacity militarily than those that don't coming in to assist. Now, one could argue that the invasion of Kuwait, what was that? 80, what? What year was that? It could have been certainly justifiable for us to come in and make a defensive strategy for Kuwait. I think there are a lot of other political situations there that made that what it was, but nonetheless, and at this point, with the challenges of a city being taken over by rebels, perhaps, right? I don't know that we know the answer there. But I do know this, and this is something that I've argued on Facebook. If we have some opposition against armed combat strikes into areas that could potentially result in especially loss of civilian life, but I would say even that of soldiers. You could say, well, they sign up, they know what they're getting into. I get that. But if we have a problem, certainly with any collateral damage that could come from armed retaliation, be that ground troops, drone strikes, airstrikes, you name it. If we have a problem with that, a civilian's being in the way, and we should, yes, okay, let's agree there, we should have a problem with that. But if we do have a problem, which I hope you do, hope you have that problem, and if you do, and you still seem to think that abortion is the right of a woman, to choose at will, I think we got a disconnect. Because it's essentially the same dynamic, only different, right? Only different, but same in the sense that we've got innocent life that is being targeted when there's no reason, right? No reason for this. Now compare this. If there was a situation where there was an active shooter, let's go back to that one. Let's get it on the micro, right? You're a concealed carry person. You've got the permit. You got the weapon. You can take out that shooter who is mowing down with an automatic, semi-automatic weapon, right? Just firing away. But you don't have a clear shot without taking someone else out. What do you do? What do you do, right? Or in the process of trying to shoot the shooter, you hit someone who is in the background of the shooter. What do you do? What does that look like? To me, we're talking about a justifiable situation, which I think it's not just me. I think it is. It is a justifiable situation that you've responded in this situation. And the double effect of this is that you did not mean to do anything evil. And in doing so, you actually created a better situation because you managed to stop this individual, but you happened to take out innocent life in the process. That is more like the situation where a woman has an ectopic pregnancy or some terrible complication late in her pregnancy, not just a discovery of a situation where the baby may be born as with Downs or anything of that nature. Not saying that. But the real possibility that not only is this baby's life in danger, but the mother's life is in danger, and a choice is made to terminate the pregnancy. Now we're talking about more of an equivalent situation. Because in order to save a life is taken. The vast majority of abortions are not in that category. They're simply not. Simply not. Now, I, for one, would negotiate that deal. I'd negotiate that deal. I would sit in Congress and say, let's do this. Let's work together on this one. You know, I'll give you whatever, right? I'll give on this, but let's look at this. I'm not saying all or nothing. I'm going to say make it criminal for doctors to do their job when it comes to diagnosing these situations that could be detrimental to the life of the mother and the child. And no, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about sending anyone to jail. Certainly not talking about putting doctors behind bars. None of that. But let's be reasonable. If we're performing abortions in the Planned Parenthood way, because the Planned Parenthood, they're not there on those, right? Understand, they're not there on those. They're with doctors and hospitals walking along with a mother who is expecting to have a baby, not planning to have an abortion, expecting to have a baby. Different dynamics entirely. So if we can get behind that one, and we can all say, I hate abortion. I hear this all the time. Well, I hate abortion, but we should never take that choice away. Okay, let's not take that choice away. Let's not take the choice of a medical professional and a mother expecting to have a child. Let's not take that choice away. I'm fine with that. Let's not do that. While at the same time, realize that what Planned Parenthood is doing is not that. This isn't healthcare. It's not essential services. It's not trying to find a way for medical professionals to do what they do and save lives. It's not that. It is, by and large, a situation of convenience that says this child needs to be gone. You say, oh, Leo, it's not convenience. It's not It's not just, you know, that this mother thinks she can't do it. They really can't. They don't have the resources. They don't have the money. They don't have the whatever it takes. And I will say to that, garbage. That's garbage. Because the resources exist. There are organizations who will walk with women through their pregnancies, making sure that everything is there, that they have the financial resources, they have everything, and even beyond the child being born, to make sure they've got everything they need. They're there. Check out Birthright for one. Check out Catholic Charities. Assurance for Life in Lexington, where we are, but there's many crisis pregnancy centers that will do the exact same thing. They've got the resources. They're gonna be there. Planned Parenthood's not going to do that. They're not going to plan your parenthood. They're not going to walk with you and give you the resources and make sure that everything is squared away. So when the ultimatum is on the table now with the Trump administration to say, okay, stop the abortions and we won't cut your funding, they know that that gamble isn't worth it. Right? They know that gamble's not worth it. Because what they do, even though it's quote unquote 3% of their services, it's a huge, I'm not sure what it is. It's a massive 40, 60%, something of that nature, of their revenue. So realize what's at stake. And you could say, Leo, it's not all about money. Really? Really? Well, it's about women having the essential services that they need. Well, I'm not saying get rid of that. If they need essential services, that's great. And there are organizations that are going to help them on those essential services. And there are doctors in hospitals who are going to help women make the very, very difficult decision of terminating a pregnancy that is not going to end well for her or the baby. They're there. Those situations occur. And doctors are available to make that happen. We're not going to say that needs to be illegal or removed. That option is always available. But the idea that, oops, something happened, and I can't handle this because I don't have the resources, money, time, energy, whatever, is simply a lie. That's not true. Those are there. There's plenty of opportunity to find it. So let's be consistent. Let's be consistent in what we believe, how we believe it, why we believe it. Let's present that in a consistent fashion that is something that we can embrace, right? This is something we can now embrace together. Conservatives, Democrats, independents like me, the contrarians who don't seem to fit any mold. Let's agree on that. Let's see what happens. That's justice. That's what justice would look like. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.